You're listening to episode 53 of SIW Radio, the podcast series from SecurityInfoWatch.com. This is Jeff Cole, and I'm your host for this security news program. This week's program is brought to you live from New Orleans, Louisiana, where the University of Southern Mississippi's National Center for Spectator Sports Safety and Security is hosting its annual conference organized by Dr. Lou Marciani. On today, August 2, 2010, this first day of the conference, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano addressed the attendees of the NCS4 conference to speak about the role of DHS in the security of our nation's sports venues. In this address, she also provides an update on the efforts to mitigate and control the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The core messaging from Secretary Napolitano is about the need to expand public-private partnerships between DHS, law enforcement, and stadium and sporting organization operators. And as part of that partnership, she called for the sports industry to adopt and champion the See Something, Say Something public security awareness campaign the DHS has recently become engaged in. Secretary Napolitano is introduced by Todd Keel, Assistant Secretary for Infrastructure Protection with the Department of Homeland Security.
We're very fortunate to have Secretary Napolitano here. I would like to introduce Todd Kiely. Todd Kiely was appointed in December of 2009 by President Barack Obama to serve as the Assistant Secretary for Infrastructure Protection at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. His office is responsible for protecting the assets of the United States, essential to the nation's security, public health and safety, economic vitality, and way of life. These assets, referred to as critical infrastructure and key resources, are divided into 18 separate sectors, as diverse as agricultural and food, emergency services, and critical manufacturing. Todd brings to the National Infrastructure Protection Mission more than 22 years of experience in global security operations and management, intelligence and law enforcement, and threat assessment and risk mitigation. Todd's unique blend of field and high-level management skills and contacts, combined with his expertise in law enforcement, threat and risk assessment and mitigation, and applying businesses' best practices to everyday government operations, is an asset to the department and the mission to protect and build for the nation's highly diverse critical infrastructure and key resources. Please now give a warm welcome to Assistant Secretary for Infrastructure Protection, Todd Kiely.
And the warm welcome. I apologize that we're running a few minutes behind. I thank you all for your patience today. I'm very pleased to be here today, and I'd like to thank in particular the conference organizers. I know a conference like this takes a lot of effort, and it's been a lot of work on behalf of the folks who put the conference together. I'd like to particularly thank Dr. Marciani for all the work that his group has done and the National Center for Spectator Sport, Safety, and Security for making this event possible. I'm also very pleased to welcome the Secretary of Homeland Security, and we're all thrilled that you could join us today, ma'am. Your presence emphasizes the importance the department places on partnerships. Partnerships make our country safer and stronger. It's the key to what we do. The activities between the leagues and DHS are a testament to that concept. Together, we developed an evacuation planning guide and template for stadiums and arenas. Together, we built a risk self-assessment tool for stadiums and arenas. Together we held the first ever public-private sports leagues national level exercise. We were able to accomplish these things because we did them together as a team. It is as a team that we must move forward, confident that we can and will keep the American people safe. And here today to talk about what this team, actually it's our team, can do to help achieve that vision is Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano. Since day one of her tenure, the Secretary has charted an ambitious new course for the Department. It's 225,000 plus employees and the Homeland Security community. She's led efforts that range from strengthening our international aviation system to combating drug cartel violence along the southwest border. We just came from the Unified Command Center, where she's helping to lead the BP oil spill response effort, including holding the responsible parties accountable for restoring the Gulf. She's also put in place strategies that have revamped immigration enforcement to make it more effective, and has initiated sweeping reforms to transform the department into a smarter, leaner, and more effective agency. The Secretary was serving in her second term as Governor of Arizona and the first woman to chair the National Governors Association when the President asked her to join his cabinet. Prior to that, she served as Arizona Attorney General and the U.S. Attorney for Arizona. The Secretary, I'm sure all of you are going to be pleased to hear, is a very avid sports fan, and we're very happy to have her with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm honored to introduce, and please join me in welcoming, the Secretary of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano.
Organizers for having me here today. It's always a pleasure to be back in New Orleans, but it was particularly gratifying to be here today, not just for this conference, but and the reason I am, and I ask your indulgence really a little bit late, is I've just been at the Unified Area Command here in New Orleans. This is the Unified Area Command for the entire Gulf region for the Deepwater Horizon oil spill response. And I thought what I'd do before I got into my prepared remarks was tell you a little bit about where that sits, because it has been a massive effort in terms of building a response beyond which no one had seen before on the surface of the sea. In terms of number of vessels, I think we've had over 6,000 vessels either skimming or laying boom or burning something on the surface of the sea. Laying boom, we have on the Gulf Coast, they have laid over 2,200 miles of boom. And have more now in place. So we had to establish the supply chain, as you might imagine, for that amount of boom coming to one area of the world. And we have today about 35,000 people working on the spill. At our height, it was close to 60,000 people working at any given time on the spill. So it has been a massive organizing activity, and it is one in which we have worked tirelessly to make sure that BP does its job and it caps the well, and then that the ocean is cleaned, and to the extent oil hits the shoreline, it is picked up, and that persons who have been impacted have their claims paid. And it's all being run out of a building over on Poydras Street, if I pronounced that correctly. So that's where I have been. Tomorrow, they are going to start a process known as the static kill, which will be the first near death of the well. And that will be followed in several weeks, we hope, by the completion of a relief well, which will be the true death of the well. And in the meantime, they have done so much burning, skimming, and booming that right now the surface is clean. And so we hope by the end of today, based on estimates by not just government scientists, but a group of scientists we brought together from outside government as well to give an estimate about how much has actually been deposited in the Gulf. That's called the flow rate. And it will be generated by the Flow Rate Estimates Group. We didn't have a lot of time to spend on names. And then tomorrow, of course, we hope is the so-called static kill. And then hopefully after that, we can provide for you and for the public at large the scientific analysis of where the oil has gone, what has happened to the oil that has spilled. And then we want to make sure that BP is the responsible party, pays what it owes for this environmental disaster. So it's appropriate that we are here in New Orleans. The Gulf has gone through a lot in recent years, and I think it's important to note that sports have been an important part of the recovery of this area of the country, particularly from events like Katrina. And I would remiss if I didn't mention that we are in the home of the Super Bowl champion New Orleans Saints. I understand they may be having a visit to the White House soon, but on behalf of the president, we are very committed to the Gulf, to its people, to the way of life here. And so this is not just for us about response to an oil spill. This is about recovery and restoration to a situation that is even better than the status of the Gulf on the day before the spill. That's our promise to the people in Louisiana. That's our promise to the people across the Gulf. And that's our promise to those who are in this room today. Now, this is my eighth trip to the Gulf in the last 100 days, and I venture to say it will not be my last. But I am very grateful that this trip has given me the opportunity to address you, because being Secretary of DHS is an unusual position in our federal government, and I use the term unusual broadly. One minute, you are coordinating the response to the largest oil spill in history. The next, you are dealing with a breach of our transportation security. The next, you may be called upon to help coordinating security, to help coordinate security for events like the Super Bowl or the Winter Olympics. So with respect to the latter, the good news is that I can sometimes arrange to actually go to the sporting event that we have helped coordinate the security for, at which point I say it's good to be secretary. But in all of them, it's very important that we think ahead and plan ahead, because the fact of the matter is that this industry is an important partner with us in defending the country against terrorism and disasters. You possess a special role in society's mind. You possess a special visibility, and you possess special assets that from time to time are called upon to perform functions, as you were just hearing, that they perhaps were not designed to do, but were called upon to do. So let me, if I might, turn to the subject of attacks and of terrorism. Because for the past 18 months, what this administration has seen, what I have seen, is an evolving terrorist environment. We no longer just see big conspiracies that evolve over time that give us an opportunity to intercept and interrupt them. We are seeing more and more individuals who are trained, who receive their trade craft, perhaps in the Fatah, perhaps somewhere else, who may have become radicalized via a group or via the internet, sitting at home. We more and more are seeing U.S. citizens themselves acting out in furtherance of Islamic jihad. And so the issue about terrorism, the prevention of attack, is something that this industry in particular needs to be paying attention to, and this industry in particular, I think, has an important role to play. So, Todd mentioned partnerships when he was discussing how we have been getting at this new and evolving threat picture at DHS. And I will tell you this, this is something that needs to be more than just a slogan or a word. These need to be active, ongoing intersections between the federal government, state, local, tribal governments, and the private sector. Because we cannot ever predict with certainty where a particular threat will emanate or where a particular risk may effectively come to pass. And as I mentioned, sports, just because of the symbolic nature of this industry and its importance to the American way of life, obtains a special and high value here. Since I have been secretary, I have met with commissioners or security directors of, I think, every major sports league on the security issue. We've engaged directly in the work Todd mentioned, the evacuation planning guide template, the risk self-assessment tool. We don't do those just to occupy our time. We have lots of things that we could be doing. We do them because they fit the threat environment that, unfortunately, is the environment in which we live. And so let's deal with that reality and be proactive about it and be thinking ahead. In May, we launched an outreach and awareness initiative to visit all of the facilities, the major sports leagues and Division I facilities in the NCAA. We have already visited and worked on with owners and operators approximately 260 of the 300 sites that are either the major professional sites or the NCAA Division I sites in our country. We conducted a tabletop exercise relating to stadium security, which had representatives from most of the major leagues and a number of the teams present there. And I want to thank everyone who helped us design that exercise and who also participated in it. Many lessons learned. And of course, while overall being a spectator at a sports event is very, very safe, and we know that. We know people from all over the world gathered safely for the World Cup recently in South Africa. Before that, they gathered safely in Vancouver for the Winter Olympics. But you only have to step back a little bit and think about, well, what happened in Uganda after the World Cup. A tragic bombing carried out by a group that harbors violent, radical views against the United States. To be reminded again that sporting events can get the attention not just of fans, but also of violent extremists, be they terrorists acting out in furtherance of radical Islam, or be they extremists from other groups as well. And when you think of incidents like Munich in 1972 or Atlanta in 1996, it's easy to see that this is a long-standing risk. Indeed, I suspect you wouldn't be having this conference if you didn't yourselves recognize the kinds of risks and the fact that they are part of our threat environment. So we need to work together to keep your venues secure. We need to make sure that the fans are safe, and we need to make sure that in doing so, we are protecting the economic and social benefits of sports in our society. And the partnerships we have built are ones we want to continue to expand with state and local law enforcement, local emergency responders, public health authorities, and with the private sector. Now, one other area of partnership that we are expanding is one not just with teams, not just with security officials, but with individuals themselves, with the fans, with the citizenry of our country. And that is making sure that everyone understands that security is a shared responsibility. You can't do it by yourselves. We can't do it by ourselves. But the plain fact of the matter is that an educated citizenry, alert stadium employees, properly trained, properly supervised, can be force multipliers way beyond what the people in this room can accomplish. When you think, for example, about the Times Square attempted bombing this year, what brought that to law enforcement's attention? It was a hot dog vendor. All right, who noticed that there was smoke where smoke shouldn't be, alerted law enforcement, and law enforcement could immediately jump on that matter. And indeed, we went from law enforcement being alerted by that very astute street vendor to capturing the Times Square bomber in 53 hours. We went from a cold call to an identification and a capture in 53 hours. Now, I don't know whether you all watch TV. Now, on TV, they have this show called 24. But I'll tell you, 24 may be a television show, but 53 was real life, and it was very, very effective law enforcement. So what does it mean when we say we want to involve the citizenry, we want to involve the fans, we want to involve everybody in the shared responsibility of our security? Well, one of the things that it means is that we carry out or conduct campaigns that reach out in that fashion. And the most successful of recent campaigns in this regard has been one that was started by New York City Municipal Transit. It was called See Something, Say Something. The See Something, Say Something campaign was started by the Metropolitan Transit Authority with funding provided in part from the Department of Homeland Security. Many other cities, states, localities have launched similar campaigns. But one reason why the campaign works is because it's easy to remember. If you see something, say something. If you see something out of the ordinary, say something to law enforcement. If you see an unattended package, say something to law enforcement. If you see people conducting surveillance of critical infrastructure, say something so that that can be inquired into. If you see vehicles parked where they shouldn't be parked, say something to law enforcement. If you see smoke coming out of anything, say something immediately to law enforcement. If you see something, say something. So if you're in a public space like a stadium and you see something that doesn't look right or looks suspicious, an unattended package or bag, an individual acting in a suspicious manner, say something. Say something in the stadium environment to a stadium attendant, to law enforcement. By the way, if it's the stadium attendants, we need to make sure they are trained and know to whom to report. So stadium employees need to be trained as well. By that simple mechanism, the adoption of a shared responsibility, and if you see something, say something mentality, we can have a force multiplier far beyond what law enforcement can provide. Now, last month, I was at Penn Station in New York City announcing the expansion of See Something, Say Something to Amtrak and to all passenger rail across the country. So when you ride on Amtrak now, you will see, if you see something, say something, signs and other indicators of the campaign. It's posters, it's public education materials, other outreach tools. If you're in shopping malls, we have reached out to the shopping mall community. If you see something, say something. And last year, before the holiday shopping season began, we conducted training online for shopping mall employees, and we had literally thousands of shopping mall employees receiving that training before the holiday season, shopping season began. We have, as I mentioned, already met with the major sports leagues and with the NCAA, and we have met with them about involving the fans, making sure stadium and venue employees know what to do. Beyond just your typical security employees, it's your concessionaires, it's your vendors, it's your men and women going up and down the aisles. All need to know, if you see something, say something. And by the way, if you see something, say something is combined with another thing we're doing, and that is very law enforcement report focus. But that's a system around the country for suspicious activity reporting, or SARS. We piloted this now in several states. It is a special partnership involving trained law enforcement to share information about suspicious incidents that may indicate future terrorist planning or other criminal activity. Information that, when lawfully collected, is analyzed and shared. It's one of the most powerful tools we have, if we have any, to prevent one of the risks present in our environment from materializing itself into an actual event where there can be loss of life, serious injury, or serious damage to property. So if you see something, say something, is for the fans, for the citizenry. SAR is for law enforcement. And now what we're working on is growing both and merging the two together as complementary systems that augment each other. That is, ongoing at DHS. I want to pause on one thing, because the press often asks me about this. The SAR initiative does not collect information based on ethnicity. It is focused solely on suspicious actions or behaviors associated with crime. And the frontline personnel who have access to the system are given extensive training in order to distinguish between those, between legal and illegal behaviors. And I think that's important to say. It has rigorous privacy and civil liberties protections built in, but we're not starting SAR from scratch. It's already been piloted in a number of places and has proven very effective in terms of focusing law enforcement where it needs to focus, sharing information where it needs to be shared, and making sure that we are being proactive about our threat environment, not just reactive after a threat actually occurred. So, SAR's ongoing, if you see something, say something, ongoing. Now, let me return to sports. I think that teams have a unique and special ability to communicate with the fans. You can help fans as well as the stadium staff connect with their responsibility when it comes to our security, not just at the game, but also once they get it in their minds, it will move to other environments as well. You can help encourage them that if they see something, say something anywhere, not just when they're attending a game. You can help to instill a broader understanding about how important it is to be prepared for an unexpected event or disaster. Sports teams are important messengers in our society. They have a unique role. They have a unique role to play here. So let me conclude my remarks with an ask, because I think there, in light of this special role, there is an ask I would like to make of you. And the ask is very straightforward. I would like our sports franchises, our sports leagues, as well as the NCAA Division I, formally enter into agreements with us, using their own marketing talents and brilliance to help us expand the reach of See Something, Say Something campaigns. Because we're all about the games, but we're all about protecting the millions of fans who attend them, who enjoy the product, and the safety and security of the product is what we are all seeking together. So in the aftermath of this and other meetings that we are conducting, and in the spirit of teamwork and partnership, we would like to see that If You See Something, Say Something campaign move from transportation and transportation venues to shopping malls and into sports as well. That way we help to expand, as I mentioned at the beginning of my remarks, the architecture we are constructing for the security of us all. Thank you all very much.
The secretary has graciously agreed to take some questions from the audience. So Gary here has a, if you would raise your hand and wait for Gary to get to you with the microphone. State your name. No questions from the media here, but if you're one of the participants, attendees, wait for Gary and ask the question. And if I may, Secretary, I'll start out and ask, how critical has the Safety Act been to increase awareness and the need for security at sports facilities?
I think I would say it is among a number of things that are critical, that there's a whole universe of things. But here's the thing about safety and security, and that is that, you know, we have a tendency, I think, in our country to go to a conference or go to a meeting or even do a tabletop, and then it's done. Okay, now we've done our safety and security thing. We can move on to what we really want to do, which is to put on a great sports product. Well, we want to make sure that safety and security are a core competency of any entity, any team, any league that is putting on sports. You can tell just from the pictures behind me, these are huge venues. We want to be trained, we want to be resilient, we want people to know what to do if an incident were to happen. But the number one thing we need to do is prevent incidents from happening from the get-go.
Thank you. We have a question here, Gary.
Sure. Madam Secretary, my name is Lynn Pagano. I'm president of the Safe America Foundation. And I just wanted to give you an invitation. We're working with Governor Joe Manchin and his wife Gail in West Virginia, and using the West Virginia Marshall football game to conduct the first ever stadium-wide texting drill on September 10th. And we applaud what you're doing, and our organization is trying to bring grassroots readiness to all America using sports venues. So we'll be working with Verizon and other companies on September 10th. And our program is called Drill Down for Safety, and last year we had 400,000 people actually conduct individual drills, and this year we're expanding it to include texting, and we think that this is an important tool, especially in sports venues where there are so many employees and spectators.
Thank you. That's great. And let me just add to that that one of the things that FEMA has done over the past year is greatly expanded the use of social media in disaster and disaster response, including certain texting and other capabilities that we didn't have, that we certainly didn't have after Hurricane Katrina. And now we have now, all in an effort to give people easier access to information, easier ability to find out what they need to do, where they need to go, how they get help, easier abilities or easier ways to find family members and others who may be lost in the course of a disaster. So, social media can be a very, very, and is a very useful tool.
Madam Secretary, also in your ask, just so you know, in the first two rows here are all the security directors from all the major leagues and the NCAA, as evidenced by Commissioner Goodell being here. The support the center has gotten from every major league and all the NCAA and every aspect has been incredible, along with your department, DHS. So I think your ask is a lot of that in those first two rows, and I think we're going to take that up at the next Board of Advisors meeting and assist you in that arena.
Great.
All right. Let me ask a final question is for the Madam Secretary, and I think I wrote this before. Do we have another question?
My name is Ron Reed. I'm with Eastern Michigan University. And in your ask for the NCAA and the venues, is there anything in particular that we could do to participate in that? How could we participate specifically?
I think the easiest thing to do is to contact our department, and we will leave with the conference organizers some contact information. On how to do that, I don't have the phone number or the email address in my head directly, but we will have a place that we leave for you. Just call them up, say we want to do something, and we'll get at it.
Finally, I'll end with one question for the Secretary, who's incredibly generous with her time. And Madam Secretary, if there's one message you would like all the NCS4 participants here today and over the next 3 days to bring back to their campuses and facilities to hear with respect to all the efforts and support the Department of Homeland Security has done, what would that message be?
Well, I don't think it would be a message about what we have done. We have done a lot. I'm perfectly pleased to stand up and say, I'll give you a laundry list of things that have gone on. But I think the key message to take away from this is that security is a shared responsibility. And that if we can empower people, if we can empower teams and communities and what have you, to help us, to help law enforcement, to help those of us that are in security. That is a, as I said many times this afternoon, that is a powerful force multiplier. Has to be done in the right way. We think the initiatives that we have created do it in the right way. It has to be done in a way that recognizes that if you are prepared, you're not as fearful as you might be. And it has to be done in a way that recognizes, I think, the special role that athletics plays in our culture and in our society. So I would not take away from this about the long list of DHS activities. I would take away two words: shared responsibility. And how we put meat on those words, on those bones, is really going to be how secure we get.
Please join me in thanking Madam Secretary.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to learn more about the National Center for Spectator Sports Safety and Security, visit their website at www.ncs4.com. That's www.ncs4.com. You can also find excellent coverage of NCS4 in the February 2009 issue of Security Technology Executive Magazine, where NCS4 was the cover story. The magazine's archives are hosted in their entirety on securityinfowatch.com. Finally, to stay up to date on security at sports stadiums, venues, and arenas, visit the Venues and Arenas news section of securityinfowatch.com, which is listed under the markets in our main navigation. To contact us, email podcast@securityinfowatch.com. Follow us on Twitter, where we are SIW Radio. There's no spaces. You can subscribe to the free SIW Radio podcast program on iTunes as well. Thanks for tuning in.